We're here at the Billie Holiday Theater for the world premiere of Reparations, running through November 24th at the Billie, and we're thrilled to have three instrumental people involved in the show joining us here on the WBGO Journal. First of all, the playwright James Sheldon, the director Michelle Shea, and one of the actors in this wonderful production, Reparations, Kamal Bolden. Thanks for all of you to be here today, and it's wonderful always to be at the Billie. So much history here. So, James, let's first talk about you as the playwright. You are the first non-African-American here to put on a show as the playwright. So a little bit of pressure, do you feel, with this?
Not pressure. I feel honored by that designation, and I'm very glad to be the first, and I don't think the last, because the Billie really is looking to bring more non-African-American artists and writers, and so I think I'll be in good company, but it's a great honor to be here. What brought me to this play as an idea? For me, my plays begin with the seeds of characters dealing with troubles, often troubles that they've not addressed about their own past. And these are four characters from different races, different nationalities, different age groups, and yet all together they find a way to kind of crack open the avoidance of their past and confront some of the dark secrets that they've all been sitting on for many, many years. So to me, that seemed another way to reframe or rephrase the more familiar debate about reparations, be it slavery reparations, American slavery, or Nazi genocide, or apartheid of South Africa. Those bigger issues I certainly touch on in terms of the moral message of the play. But this is a story about four characters who struggle to confront the injustices of their past.
The director of this show is a Tony Award nominee, Michelle Shea. Michelle, what made you interested in doing this? I mean, you've been involved with wonderful shows, August Wilson, Seven Guitars, and wonderful productions like this. Why did you want to direct this piece?
Well, first of all, I was invited by Indira Eduardo, who is the artistic helm of the Billie Holiday, and she's a visionary, one of the most important artistic leaders in this country today, in my opinion. So when she calls you, you come. At least that's the way I feel about her. This is my fourth project with her, and the Billie is a place where I started my career years ago, going through Changes by Richard Wesley, directed by Lloyd Richards right here, which was very, very exciting. And I've directed The Old Settler here a couple of seasons ago and participated in a show called 50 and 50, which is with all women writers doing a piece both here in L.A. and North Carolina. Reparations interested me because James is writing about stuff that we haven't heard about in this particular way before, and it has been thrilling, really, to work as long as we have together. We met last year, and we've been collaborating on this play since that time, trying to make it the best that it can possibly be, and the evolution of it has been thrilling, and I think it's going to offer the audiences in the whole tri-state area an experience they have not had before.
New lenses is kind of the look at how, you know, this show is. Explain to our audiences, you know, some of the things that you mentioned that haven't been discussed through new lenses.
Okay, well, one of the things is like the issue of race. One of the things that happens, I think, in the racial conversation is people make assumptions about who the other one is. And one of the goals that I have is to change that. Just as soon as you think you know who the characters are, some other aspect of them is going to present themselves. So hopefully by the end of the evening, we have a much broader perspective about understanding one another and also empowering ourselves to go beyond, as James talks about, the boxes that we are in that limit us. We're either outside of ourselves we're limited, or we limit ourselves because of our history and our pain.
Kamal Bolden plays Reggie, very complex character in this show. You're smiling already because you have this wonderful smile, but your character goes through all kinds of emotions. Tell us what you want us to know about your character.
Oh, that's a great question, Doug. What I would like the audience to know about the character, I can only answer that from the perspective of Reg himself, and he has a very large heart and a capacity as an empath to feel for so many other human beings that are around him that he comes in contact with, and that could come with a lot of emotional complexity. And so what Reg would want people to know is that he's always open and feeling for others, that there's a certain amount of kindness that's innate within all of us. And so it's hard to answer that question when you say, what do you want people to know about him? Because he is so complex. He's first of all, a fantastic writer. He hasn't found the success yet, but I love what James set up in terms of him being a novelist. He's written this amazing black New York detective that goes to a whole other country to track down this killer, to exonerate someone who has been disenfranchised like himself growing up. And that reminded me of one of my favorite characters in all novels, E.Z. Rollins from the Walter Mosley series. Many people remember the movie Devil in a Blue Dress. And so I was excited to see that this novelist had written a character similar to him. And so there's going to be so many twists and turns, like Michelle said. Once you think you know someone, there's going to be another layer of that onion that's peeled back. And that's what attracted me to the play, is that you, even though there's a horse in the race for everyone who comes to this play, the good thing is that they're not archetypal. There's going to be a time when you agree with that horse. You're like, yeah, that's exactly what I think. And then that character is going to say or do something that you go, oh, no, don't do that. Don't think that way. That's not how we think. And then it's going to open your perspective and really open up the dialogue.
So Reg, Kamal's character, ends up in the apartment of a recently widowed white book editor. So take us from there, what you want us to know about the synopsis, James.
Without giving anything away, we come across this rather odd pairing of a late 30s black novelist and a, let's say, mid-50s white female editor whose husband has passed. And they begin to like each other one-to-one quite quickly, though they still stumble over some of the baggage that comes with being a middle-aged white woman and a younger black American male. They seem to be starting a relationship that has some great promise, but things step in, usually things about their past, some of which is shared past. And the relationship at the end of the first half of the play is left hanging in the air. What are these two people going to do? We set it up so that they're two other characters coming for lunch the next day. And those two characters, a Nigerian woman and an English man, again of different ages, classes, professions, they come into the mix and sparks fly. These are people who have a lot in common in a good sense, in that they enjoy each other. There are some very touching connections that they make, and yet because of the character of Reg and what's driving him as a motivation, suddenly the surface calm breaks and all four of them are caught up in confronting the truths about their past.
Going back to what Michelle had said about some new lenses for people when they look at race, what did this open up for you? Have you already had conversations with friends and family after, you know, working on this show, Kamal, that maybe you hadn't talked about before?
Most definitely. I learned something from every show and every director that I come in contact with. It teaches you about yourself, and that's what theater does. I've watched so much theater because you only sit in that theater and pay that price to learn something about yourself that you didn't confront or discover yet. And I would say, in terms of the conversation of race and in this particular instance, it's between two people who are attracted to each other. And that changes the complexity of it, because the objective is to be with that person. And so when these difficult conversations happen or things get brought up, you have to be nuanced about it and you have to have a certain amount of care. And I think that that's what's really important whenever we talk about it. So for me, to answer your question, I think that now when I approach anybody in any milieu, any environment, and someone in that particular question comes up, it's to listen first. We all think we have the answers. We all think we have our perspective. But what happens when we just truly listen without the intent of responding? A lot of times we listen and we're ready. We already have a response ready. We've heard a trigger and we say, I got something for that. What happens if you just listen and you say, okay, you know, all right, now that I've heard that, now I'm going to let it affect me and possibly change me. And that's a scary place to come from.
I had a lot of discussions with my students at Bloomfield College, Michelle, about race, to a point where I said, if I was going to be presenting a forum about race, would you go, me being a white man? And they were honest, and they said, probably not. So I stepped out of the way, out of the conversation, and let them develop a show about what race and racism means to them. What kind of conversation do you think could come after this show that would please you?
Wow, what a question. That is a really great question. I think the number one thing is really to know that you cannot judge a book by its cover, and that race is an identity, is a place through which we experience being alive, but it's not the whole story. It's an important story, but it's not the whole story about who we are. And part of what interests me in directing this is finding a way to have conversations that we don't have and to reveal our biases in how we deal with one another that may not be overt to the characters themselves, but the audience watching can see what they're doing. And being able to be willing to be in the, I call it being in the kitchen with each other, as you dig through the places that are extremely uncomfortable and very present in the times that we're living in now, doing it with humor, wit, and letting all the full range of emotions be there, even the ugliness. I want all of it to be there to see where is the path to the light out of the tunnel, so that the possibility of relationship exists after we've gone through the war of trying to understand each other, of judging each other, of hurting each other, and making each other laugh and love together.
Has James changed you, or you changed James, during the process of this director-playwright conversation?
We've all changed each other, because I'm a baby from the O'Neill Playwright Center, which is where I was first introduced to August, but there we worked with new playwrights giving birth to their baby plays, and everybody got to participate in that. And so James endured me for a year and Indira, and then he got introduced to the cast. We did a two-day workshop where we developed the play, and they gave feedback playing the characters, and we've been continuing to do that in order to get to the diamond and the gold in the piece. James is brilliant at creating twists and turns that make you go, no, I can't believe she said that. Oh, I can't believe that happened, which makes it really big fun to come to the theater. So even though the subject sounds heavy, it is dealt with in so many unusual, fun ways. And if he doesn't do that, then we're working on the other part.
We're talking about reparations running through November 24th at the Billie Holiday Theater. We're here with the playwright James Sheldon, the director Michelle Shea, and one of the actors in the show playing the role of Reggie is Kamal Bolden. James, when you see those gems and those diamonds that Michelle just talked about, let's talk about with Reggie's character and Kamal. What goes through your mind? Is it, yep, that's the exactly the way I looked at it? Or maybe you look at it as, you know, this is even better than what I thought.
Yeah, I'd have to say with Michelle's perspective, I've come to appreciate these characters even more than when I had originally put them on paper. And they've changed to some degree. The characters not so much as the structuring of the play. Michelle is a genius at getting the writer to, you know, writers have their eyes glued in a very narrow way to what vision they're putting together. And she's been able to help me step back and guide me to, maybe this is a beautiful thing to say, but maybe it shouldn't be said here. Maybe you should hold it for the second act, and here's why. And those kinds of dialogue, that kind of dialogue, those discussions we've had over the last several months have really helped me understand the characters better and hopefully turn out a more compelling play.
When you watch Kamal on stage, what is it about him that you are particularly, you know, already excited about as this show gets underway?
Well, Reg is a complicated character, as you all were saying. He is a black American from the inner city who, through his hard work and good luck, entered private schools, mostly white schools, at a fairly early age, high school, university. And he's struggling to find the road ahead in his career and in his personal life. And Kamal brings a kind of friendly, mysterious quality to this man who is, I think, very, very lovable, but very troubled. And so there's a certain amount, a large amount of pain in his story that Kamal has been able to delve into and portray in a very convincing way.
Kamal, you've done several TV shows, including The Resident, Chicago Fire, but almost every actor that I talk to, there's nothing like being live on stage. Obviously, this is you're already shaking your head, so it's the same way for you. How excited are you about getting this play off the ground?
I can't even put into words the amount of excitement. When I got the phone call, just to take a page out of Michelle Shea's book, when a certain visionary, someone who has that light, gives you the call, then you answer it, you come. And she was that one for me. I met her in Los Angeles about a year ago auditioning for a play that I did not get the role for. And so for all you actors out there, that cliche about go in, audition, show the best of yourself, you might get a call later, it is absolutely true. Not all the time, but when it does happen, you've struck gold. And a year later, Michelle called me up and she told me about this play. And I automatically knew from that audition that we had. She actually, during the auditions, one of the few times it's ever happened. Only other time was with Jonathan McCrory at the National Black Theater, where a director sat me down during the audition and talked to me and asked me how I felt about the play, how I felt about larger themes of the play and the characters, and wanted to know how I thought, not just the result of the audition. And I knew something, we had something we shared. It was like this kindred spirit between the two of us. And so when she approached me and she said the title over the phone, I was in the Target and I just dropped whatever was in my hands, not on the floor, but in the basket. And I said,
oh. It's okay if it would have been on the floor.
That would have made the story better, but nah, I don't, you know, they say you break, you buy, and I wasn't prepared to pay for that yet. So I definitely dropped everything I was doing and I listened and I just knew I had to take the call to come from Los Angeles to here in New York. And then I read the play. And also the Billie Holiday Theater. I said, wait a minute, let me look up the Billie Holiday. I know who Billie Holiday is, but let me look up the theater. And once I saw the history, as an actor, you want to be in good company, especially if you're a spiritual person. You want to walk onto the boards, the stage that has been held down by giants before you so that you can have that foundation and someone to bolster you up. And I looked at, you know, the pictures of Samuel L. Jackson and Ruby Dee and Pauletta Washington. And I mean, the list goes on to Sheena Arnold. I mean, the alumni that have been on this stage. I mean, there's no way I could say no. And then the play's awesome. So being here in Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, this theater, this hollow theater reimagined with these two, this play is going to be amazing. I mean, it's going to be gangbusters. People are going to definitely talk about it during the play, during intermission, during the second act, after the play, on social media. Like, I already know this is going to be something that's going to be talked about for years to come.
You mentioned a key word, I think, that when you talked about, you said Michelle listened and wanted to know what you had to say and think. That's what this whole reparations is about, listening. You had mentioned it before, listening to other people's opinions and not ready to jump in with your own. This also says something about Michelle, too, that the fact that she remembered what you had to say and now has drawn upon your talents for this show.
Absolutely correct. And that, as an artist, that type of love and that type of family is something that is rare. And when it does happen, you have to know that it comes from a higher power. And it's something that you should relish in and hold sacred to you. And that's what I do. I truly hold this particular experience close to my heart, and I'm giving it my all. But, I mean, you brought up the title of the play. We keep talking about it. It's about reparations. And I already had my own opinions about the actual term of reparations and what that means from about the African diaspora. And I think that a lot of people will come in here and have their own reservations about it too. I mean, the New York Times actually wrote an article earlier like this May, you know, there's been political candidates in this race for the presidency that have put a platform together for whether or not the country should pay reparations. And there's been scholars coming up with calculations and things. So I know our audience is going to come in informed and they think they're going to, you know, engage in a certain thing, but we're going to turn it on its head. And they're going to go, oh, well, I never thought about reparations in that particular way. But I want mine, though. I just had to put that in. I want mine. There we go.
Michelle, when you looked at Kamal and you said, nah, not for this show, I'm always fascinated. How do you know when somebody is truly right? Now, you had that conversation with him, but he went home, obviously, disappointed. It's a tough job, no matter who you are, when you're deciding somebody's talent. When we have our music director at WBGO and he's deciding what artist gets on the air and what matches the sound of WBGO, how do you know when an actor is right for a show? What connects inside you?
I suppose it's a gut feeling, but you know, Kamal was he was very close to the top in that other play. It was King Hedley II. It was between him and one other person. But when it came to Reg, he was the man. There was no doubt about it. And from the moment I told him, I said, you have to do this role. This role, Reg, is very challenging role, and I felt that he had the bandwidth to be able to be to handle all of him, because he's a full course meal, five course meal, Mr. Reg is. And then from the moment that he first spoke the lines, everybody in the room, James and Indira, everybody nodded and said yes. So I just knew he has a kind of hunting quality about him as an artist. I think that he's a really special artist. In fact, the whole cast is. We're very lucky that way. It's an extraordinary cast. They all bonded together, which is good. And we've got a good reparations family that is, we are committed to excellence. We're committed to delivering an unforgettable theatrical experience. So I guarantee the audience to have that. And they won't stop talking about it, because the truth is that we even had actors who didn't end up being in this play. Once they read it, they were haunted by it and kept talking about it and couldn't stop thinking about it. And everybody in it has been that way.
You've done several shows, James. You've written several pieces. Why dip into such a controversial topic? You could take the easy route and do something else, but you chose something that really people need to talk about. What lit that fire for you for the first time you said, I have to do this show?
Well, I've had similar experiences with earlier shows, which were topical, controversial. My first full-length play took place in the Soviet Union in the days of the communist oppression of Russian artists. I've done other plays that involve race, that involve some of the issues of our time. Frankly, I, with a few exceptions, I haven't written any plays that are not fraught with controversy. To me, that's what attracts me to this form of writing. I want to weigh in and reflect the world around me as best I can in ways that can help audiences rethink or think again about some of the common assumptions we all seem to have about these big issues.
Maybe not reparations, but race itself. When you get on the subway or you walk on the street, what are you noticing about people as we approach 2020? Do we see each other for who they are? Do we not look at people? Do we make that assumption quickly of who they would want to say hello to?
I see both. I see people, and people have various characteristics, particularly with the distance of being in a subway car, their age, their gender, their race, their dress, and yet each of them is an individual person. You know, the thing that I like to emphasize, everybody says, well, as a white man, as a black woman, as a transgender, I believe such and such. No, for myself, I believe. That's the way I like to begin thinking about what a conversation can entail. So when I'm on the subway, I see people really in two facets, not always equally clear, but they are, you know, the social character, the public face of the person, but there's also, you sit across a row from someone, look into their eyes, you see that there's a personal story there too, and it's the intersection of the two that I find provides so many opportunities for a playwright.
There's a wonderful intersection between the characters in Reparations. Kamal, I'll ask you to talk about the other cast members in this show and how it is working with them.
It is challenging every day to live up to the rest of the cast members that we've assembled, one of which plays opposite me, Alexandra Neal. She's amazing. She's absolutely beautiful and amazing, and she's had an amazing career already. And one thing about it, when we read in the workshop and we sat right next to each other, I can already feel there was a chemistry between the two of us. And when we started to read the play, I knew exactly where we were, what we had, and how much we can build upon that. So then we added the other two cast members. We have Lisa Arendell, who's had an illustrious career in film and television, and as well as theater. She grew up here in New York in Juilliard grad, and she's gonna be when people experience the first act and what that has to give them. The second act, she comes through and gives a whole nother, she's like the first breeze of summer that comes through the house. And so I think people will really love Lisa Arendell. And then a very special person, Hayes DeVille, who I probably did not say his name. Heiss. It's tough, but we call him G. He's a South Africaner. An amazingly warm man who's played just devilish villains in his career. You wouldn't believe that he has that type of range when you meet him, but then you see his acting reel, and you go, oh my God, that guy's scary. But he's amazing in this play also. So every day we come into rehearsal, we hug, we talk, and then I get on the floor with them, and I'm just enamored by them, and I just want to live up to what they have given me on the stage.
So, Michelle, what would be the conversation or comment as someone's leaving Reparations here at the Billy that would make you feel like, yes, job well done? Is there something that you would want to hear people say as they walk out or as they get into their car, or as they get in the subway?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I want to say is that something that we grappled with in the room, we grapple with every day, is that we don't listen to things the same way African-American, our culture, we listen one way, and other cultures listen another way. And G brings in a whole other thing coming from South Africa. And so learning how to make room for each of those different listening patterns is part of what's going to be exciting for the audiences when they come. So there's no way to predict what's going to happen. Something extraordinary is going to happen. One thing for sure is that it's not going to be dull. It is not going to be dull at all. But hopefully it'll make people go a little bit farther in reaching out to each other.
James Sheldon, since this is your baby, you know, one thing that when we see movies, always the word comes up, well, how about the sequel or part two or this and that? But we don't necessarily talk about it a lot when it comes to plays. All these shows that you've done. Now, if Reparations, there was Reparations 2, could that even come into your mind with what has happened?
After Reparations, you know, like there was the Doll's House Part 2. Somebody wrote a sequel.
That's right, that's right.
To Ibsen's famous play. I never say no, never say never, but I don't see that being the natural evolution of the work. Who's to say, you know, if Hollywood comes calling or a producer says, you know, we'd really like to do part two of Reparations, then we can start talking about it. But right now I'm steeped in part one, and we'll be happy to see it up and on the boards in another week.
So what was the first play you ever read?
The first play I ever read... Boy, that is an interesting question. I can tell you the first show I ever saw, which was The Music Man, circa 1959. I've been taken to the theater by friends, parents, teachers when I was too young to go on my own. And it took me a while to get to write plays. That's a whole other story, but this is a third career for me. And I'm just thrilled to be among such supportive and artistic people here at the Billy.
And people are thrilled that you did have a third career, because now they get to see Reparations and all your work as a playwright. Reparations runs through November 24th at the Billy Holiday Theater, a centerpiece of the inaugural New Windows Festival here at the Billy. Michelle, James, Kamal, what a pleasure to sit down with all three of you. Congratulations on Reparations, and we look forward to this show and others that you're involved in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I love the station. I've been a fan since, the late 70s.